Hello, everybody. Welcome to the show. This is the Call and Podcast, powered by CLNS Media. I'm Alex Barth. As always, I am joined by Alex Lebowitz. We're recording this Wednesday, April 24th at 6 o'clock, just in case any news breaks between the time we record this and I post it. Lebowitz, how you doing?
Doing well. I'm doing very well. We're at Wednesday already. It's a quick week.
Quick week. Very well. That's because the next couple days between the draft and playoffs and all of that, you know, there's a lot going on. There was a lot going on at the beginning of the week. There's even more going on at the end of the week. And I do want to make note there is a lot to talk about. We kind of picked this format switch to just one topic at like the worst time because we did it when everything happens at once.
Yeah.
But what's going to happen is we're going to have this show that you're listening to right now. We're going to talk about the Bruins, Game 7 last night. That was awesome, and what to expect from Columbus. We will have a show for you at some point early tomorrow afternoon, maybe late morning, early afternoon, somewhere in there. Definitely before the draft starts, we will have a draft preview show for you tomorrow. And then the Celtics start Sunday at 1, so Sunday at some point before 1 o'clock, there will be an episode up where we'll talk about the Boston Celtics. I don't want people to think we're kind of pushing them to the back. We haven't talked about them in a while. And the draft obviously is important now, just over 24 hours away. But we got a lot to get to. We'll have a lot of short episodes coming up. But Alex Lebowitz, the Boston Bruins, that is the focus of this episode right here, because they just won another Game 7. They're moving on to the second round. They have home ice advantage for the rest of the playoffs. They are the highest seed remaining. It's a really good time right now to be the Boston Bruins. You say Game 7 against Toronto, you know, they didn't look great at points in that series, but it's always best to be playing your best hockey the most recent time, and the Bruins played their best hockey the playoffs in Game 7.
Absolutely. I would say they have an advantage heading into this, even though they played seven games a series and the Blue Jackets are going to be rested.
9 days. They have nine days. Blue Jackets will have 9 days between games when we get going tomorrow.
And that's a detriment. If there's anything that's going to kill a hot streak, it's that type of layover. Right. So the Bruins, not only are they going right back at it, but again, they're not playing the Lightning. They're hosting the Blue Jackets. They got home ice throughout the playoffs, so they don't have to travel. And they're going to be geared up and ready to go. They're still in that game mode. They're still in that playoff mode. There was no complacency in that there's not going to be in this 48 hours between games. So it's as good of a position as you'd want to be in if you're a Bruins fan or if you're on the Bruins. They're playing really good hockey. They got a hot goalie. And overall, they're the favorites right now.
An astute observation, Mr. Lebowitz, because that's actually, I was going to bring up, that's what Bruce Cassidy said after the game last night. He's not worried about not having time off because this team is playing so well. And he thinks part of the reason they struggled early on in the Toronto series, this is at least what he said, was that, you know, they had some rest before that series. Guys weren't playing a lot. They were trying to get everybody ready for the playoffs. And now they get to get right back to it. And it's rest versus rust. And I take rust all day in hockey specifically. I think it's different for different sports, but the Bruins are red hot. And you mentioned the goaltender. And Tuukka Rask really changed a lot of narratives last night. He wouldn't admit it when he spoke after the game, but you got the feeling he kind of knew what that game meant for the way people view him in this town and across the league. He was outstanding. He was outstanding all series, but last night he was the best player on the ice for either team. You know, going post to post a number of times, a few point blank saves, and that's what the Bruins need. You think back to 2011, and I know it's kind of a hefty task to compare a team that's just won one playoff round to the most recent Bruins team to win a Stanley Cup. I'm going to make a couple comparisons between those teams throughout this episode, but the goaltender has to be that guy. The way this team is structured, the way that team was structured, the goaltender has to be, if not the best player on the ice, one of the best three players for the team throughout the run. And Rask showed last night he can do that. The question is now, you know, everybody's saying, oh, Rask can play in big games. This is solved. That's not true. They say there's nothing bigger than a Game 7. You know what's bigger than Game 7 of Round 1? Game 1 of Round 2. They only get bigger from here. This isn't the end. This is the beginning. So there's still a long way to go for Rask, but very encouraging what we saw last night.
Yeah, I think you saw an improvement from earlier on in the series. You go back to Game 5, and you know that second goal, he was out of position. And
that was the Matthews one, right?
Yeah, I believe so. And yeah. And that was the difference, although the Bruins played like crap during that game for the most part. He wasn't good enough to get you the win. In that second period, the Bees, they were not playing well, and they were getting beat a lot.
Talking about last night.
Last night. Yeah. And The one thing
that was as stressful a period as I think at any point during the series. That
absolutely. I mean, you saw the Bruins come out in that first period, and I thought they were outplaying the Maple Leafs. They both teams were getting shots on goal, but I just feel like the Bruins were a little bit faster and a little bit smoother. Second period, the Maple Leafs, to their credit, made adjustments. The Bruins kind of looked slow out of the gates, and again, it was Tuukka Rask who saved them. So the fact that you've seen an improvement from him this postseason so far in round one, that's huge. And he's been here before. I know people like to always doubt him to an extent, and a lot of times it's justified when he's in one of those bad stretches. But overall, he is a veteran, and people, I think, forget that. We're going into round two, and I said it just now earlier, this is the best scenario possible for the Bees, best scenario possible for Rask. A lot of people weren't even sold that he was the guy. They were sold that he might have been the guy.
There's still people. I was driving home. There's still people calling into 98.5 wanting a lock to get a game.
And you know what? I think he's removed all doubt, or he should. For logical fans, you ride with him. He's been playing well, and it's what you can hope for as a Bees fan.
And look, a lock can change in one game. As it stands right now, he is their – Halak should not be in the conversation. He is their goaltender. He played well as you can ask, you know, for 90% of that series, or maybe one or two soft goals. But, you know, that's as good as I've seen him look in the playoffs. Those last two games – I'll throw in game six too, actually. Those last two games are as good as I've seen him look in the playoffs, at least since 2013, maybe ever. It's been a while since I watched those 2013 games. I'd have to go back and look. But he was outstanding. And in the other group, the other position I want to give credit to last night was the depth. And this is where I'll make another analogy to that 2011 team. And the strength of that team in 2011, a major strength of that team, was that they could run four deep evenly. They could throw out four lines, all of which could be competitive with any line the opponent had to offer. And the Bruins have done that this year. But when Sean Corrali went out, when he broke his hand and they didn't have him at the beginning of this series, they really struggled. That fourth line became a liability. They were getting less than 10 minutes a night on the ice. You could tell physically it was taking a toll on the top three lines, and it really caused a lot of issues for Bruce Cassidy and the Bruins. Then you get Sean Corrali back. Game five was sort of a feeling out period, so I'll push that to the side for the sake of my argument. But that fourth line, and I'll say the third line too, Johansson had a huge goal last night. Coyle had the empty netter. But the third and fourth line, specifically the fourth line last night, drove that team to the victory. Obviously, Corrali's goal was awesome. That was probably the best single goal in the game, maybe in the whole series for the Bruins. Joakim Nordstrom's goal, I've watched that 100 times. I still don't understand how that puck went in. Anderson was right on the post. But that unit playing their best, kind of like we just talked about with Rask, that fourth line, third and fourth line, playing their best in game seven is huge going into this Columbus series, because they are going to need all four lines to beat Columbus. And I know people are going to say, oh, they were the eighth seed. You know, it's kind of always been a joke of a franchise. It's John Tortorella, which, by the way, watch all of the post-game press conferences, regardless of what happens, because Tortorella is – he's almost beyond Rex Ryan. It's hockey, so not as many people know. Tortorella is an amazing quote. You can look it up. But look, Columbus beat Tampa for a reason, and I'm not sure anybody really knows exactly what that reason is yet, but there's something going on there. I'm not saying I'm picking the Blue Jackets, but this is not going to be a walk in the park series like some people are saying it is.
Absolutely not. You can't underestimate a team that just swept the best team in the league, a team that was doing something historic. You can't underestimate them. I think the one thing that the Bruins might have going for them, in addition to what you said, is I think they were 3-1 against the Blue Jackets this season.
Yeah, and it's a different team. They totally reworked that team.
And maybe they did a little bit, but all four of those games, it was backloaded. It was like within the last month of the season.
That's fair.
So I think that it is somewhat relevant.
There's some recency factor, absolutely.
And just to play devil's advocate for the Bees, they're very beatable. I mean, all those games were pretty much up for grabs. Could have gone either way. Even that last game, 5-1, but you got to remember two empty net goals, the last one being Patrice Bergeron as the clock expired.
And a really bad beat. I don't know if you placed any units on that game.
Oh, yeah.
But I know some people were – and it's Patrice Bergeron too, right? The ultimate – like, you don't think of him as a rub-it-in guy. You think he'd just carry the puck out and not want the cheap goal. So the last guy you would expect to do that. A lot of people not pleased with Patrice Bergeron today.
Yeah, I think – you know what? it's the end of the series. You're going to win anyway. Why not? You're at home ice. Why not make that? Well, yeah, it's Toronto.
I'm happy he did it. I'm totally fine he did it. But then again, if I had units on the game, I might feel a little differently.
Yeah, but I'm not betting on hockey. I know better than do that. But the point being, they're beatable, and you hope they don't come in complacent. There's a few games this series, as past series, in which they just went in with, you know, not the energy you'd expect from a team in the postseason. So it could obviously go either way. If we saw anything from last round with the Flames and the Lightning, we know that, especially with a team like Columbus. So they're beatable. That's my only thing. They're beatable, and I wouldn't bet the house on them.
Yeah, and I mean, I'll just say this. You know, you want to talk about Russ versus Russ. You have this other thing in a very young Columbus team, right? The guys like Seth Jones, who's an assistant captain, who's, you know, not new to the league, but, you know, this is probably the most competitive team he's played on. He was on some decent teams in Nashville. But I kind of want to compare it almost, if you allow me, to the early 2000s Patriots, in that I don't know that this team knows how to lose. In that, you know, they just knocked off a generational Tampa Bay Lightning team. And then they had 9 days to just sort of sit on the top of this cloud and enjoy it. They may come out, and that's all they know, right? They just know domination. They swept that Tampa team. They're going to be playing supremely confidently. And it's the Bruins can handle that in one of two ways. They can get overwhelmed by it, or, you know, the Blue Jackets are confident, but they're young. Maybe catch them in the mistakes. Use your experience if you're the Bruins. Catch them when they get overconfident, make them pay for it. And I think that's what the Bruins are going to do. Mm-hmm. I think that could be huge for the Bruins. I think they have to get a lead early, both in the game in the games and in the series. If they can do that and kind of force Columbus into an uncomfortable position, that's going to be the biggest key for me for the Bruins in this series. And then a guy I'm looking at is Torey Krug. Because you go back to the last time the Bruins faced John Tortorella in the playoffs, it was the Rangers series back in 2012, 2013. It was that series where Krug really broke out, right? Nobody knew who he was, and he had this monster playoff series. And that's the way you beat John Tortorella's teams. They're all defensively designed. They start with the defense going forward. They're about preventing puck movement close to the net. So you need guys on the blue line who can control the puck, who can be safe with the puck, who can make plays with the puck, make tight passes into tight windows. Krug's the best guy the Bruins have to do that. He's dominated Tortorella before. Didn't have the best series against Toronto. Not that he was a total liability, but he was not the guy we know he can be. He's going to need to play a major part if the Bruins are going to beat Columbus, and we'll see how much he can elevate his game here in round two.
Yeah, he's going to be big. Obviously, a guy that people have been talking about a little bit is Zdeno Chara.
Yeah.
He led the Bruins in plus minus. I think he was like number two in the league for that first round.
Number two and the number one defenseman. Plus so, six.
It's not something you'd expect from a 6'9", 42-year-old defenseman. But he has been sneaky, really impressive.
Nobody. I mean, you kind of brought it up before the show, which was a great point. Chara got almost no buzz during this series, and then you look at the numbers, and he was great.
And it's not like he's only playing, like, he's only on ice for, you know, 16, 17 minutes a game. He's on there
21 and a half, 20.
I think he was on for like 23 or 24 in game seven. So he's been very reliable. Will that last, or will his age kind of hold him down a little bit? Especially when you're playing at this volume this late in the season. Just one other statistic coming into this one is the end of the regular season, the Blue Jackets won 7 of their last 8. So now what does that make it? 11 of their last 12 they've won, if you count the regular season. That one loss was against the Bruins 6-2. But this is a team that is hot. That's for sure.
I mean, on top of that, they only allowed 5 goals in their last 4 games, and 3 of those came in the first period of that first game.
Yeah.
So, I mean, absurdly hot, and hot defensively. A hot goaltender, goalie Bob. We didn't even talk about him yet. When he's on, he can be the best goaltender in the world. And the Bruins are going to have to. And if it felt like they were playing the best goaltender in the world, which it did at times against Frederik Andersen, there's going to be a lot more of that feeling in round two.
Definitely, definitely. And I think that's why you said it. The Bruins have to get out to a quick start. You know, be the first one on the board. And if you do that and you kind of punch them in the mouth early on, you have a better odds of just winning that first game. From then on out, you'd think that the Blue Jackets will be, you know, up to speed and be back at game speed. But you got to get off to a hot start. You cannot come out complacent in that first period, especially when you're at home. And you can't lose game one and get away with it like you did against Toronto.
All right, one other hockey thing we have to talk about before we go to our final thoughts was, I mean, we're just going to kind of talk about all of last night, all of Tuesday night, because it was an all-time great night in sports. It really was. But since we're on the topic of hockey, we have to touch on the Sharks-Golden Knights game and that ending and that series, because that was something. If you didn't watch it, the highlights are up on YouTube. That's kind of what I had to do this morning. I missed it because I got home from the Bruins, working the Bruins game. I saw everybody tweeting about the Trailblazers. I put that on. I missed this great ending. But I went back. I watched the highlights this morning. Basically, Game 7, the Sharks won in double overtime to force Game 7. They get a home game. They go down quickly, 4-1. They score 4 goals in 5 minutes on a major penalty, a very borderline call on a 5-minute major. They end up with 9 minutes to go in the game. That penalty starts with 50 seconds to go. The Golden Knights, tie it up. And then with a minute to go in overtime, the Sharks win it. I the call to me was a bad call. It should have been a 2-minute penalty. I think some of it was the way his head hit the ice, the way Logan Couture's head hit the ice was unfortunate. And look, in the regular season, I get that being a 5-minute penalty, but officials have always been a little more relaxed in the playoffs. And it wasn't just last night. It wasn't just that series. It's kind of been league wide. We've seen the officials take a bit more of a sturdy approach to officiating the playoffs than we have, which isn't great to see, but I guess they've been consistent with it. But that game last night, just going back to it, that's going to go down as one of the all time great playoff hockey games.
Yeah, and maybe for the wrong reasons. I don't agree with that call either. I agree with the call, but the extent of it, 5 minutes for that penalty, I think it was very excessive, especially when you're in the postseason. You got to put the whistle away. And if it's a tacky call or if it's a tacky play.
The call was fine. The tick-tacky part was between it being a 2-minute minor or a 5-minute major. That's where the issue was.
And it was a difference. And so people saying, well, they still gave up 4 goals in 5 minutes. Sure, they lost by 1 goal. It went to overtime.
The Bruins had 4 minutes of – and it wasn't consecutive, granted, but the Bruins had to kill off 4 minutes of penalty last night.
Yeah.
They didn't allow – kill the penalty. You could have allowed 1. You could have allowed 2. You would have been fine. 4 goals in 4 minutes, that's pretty bad. And I'll say this, and Jonathan Marchessault, after the game, plays for the Golden Knights. He compared it to the Saints game, the NFC Championship. And I think for a number of reasons, that's a good comparison. But I said this about the Saints, you know, run the ball, kill clock. That's what you should have done. You know, kill out the penalty. It's not like you were in this foreign situation. If you're the Golden Knights, that's a situation you've been in. You've killed a number of penalties this year. Just do it one more time and you get to go to the second round. So, It was an interesting call. I don't know it was the best call, but I'm not giving Vegas a total cop out on it either.
Yeah, again, excessive, but you got to kill the penalty. You give up 4 goals in 5 minutes. It's embarrassing. Essentially, it's just embarrassing. And I think that's a good comparison, a fitting comparison as well. You're in Game 7. You're what, 13 minutes away from going to the next round?
11
minutes there was away,
like 10 and change, 11 and change off the clock. Yeah, you're 9 minutes away. It was 11 gone. It was right under the 10-minute mark. That penalty was called.
So that's on you. Close it out. Close out the game.
I mean, even 5-on-4, that many goals in that shorter period of time. Like, just win, if you can prevent that just by winning a faceoff, is really all you need to do. And they couldn't even do that. So. That's our thoughts on that. As we move into final thoughts, I'll go first because it kind of relates and ties together how awesome last night was. Damian Lillard, first of all, the whole, you know, they came back from down 13. He had 50 points, but the shot, that was the single most badass shot I've seen in the NBA, I think, in the last decade. That was unbelievable for a number of reasons, but the biggest thing that stood out to me, there's all these angles coming out, right? And that video's probably come out from, what, 10, 20 angles of him hitting that shot. There's actually a still image from the other end of the court, so from behind Lillard, and you see the ball is out of his hands already. It's just over Paul George's fingers, and you can see that there's 1.4 seconds on the clock. there was still time on the clock for him to move and get a better shot, get a screen, move up, whatever. He took that shot with time to spare. That ball took 2 seconds to get to the rim. It timed out perfectly that it went in right when the horn sounded, seriously, like out of a movie. But he had time. It's not like he had to rush that shot up. So absolutely banana land to me. I know people are saying it was a bad shot. It probably was. He was 57% spot this year, apparently, on 20 attempts. But how is Paul George going to call that a bad shot sitting next to Russell Westbrook? Like, I'm sorry.
That's
how,
a good point.
How are you going to do that? So this brought up two interesting questions for me, and I want to get your thought on them. First off, my brother texted me this right after the shot. Kyrie for Damian Lillard, straight up, do you do it? Contracts aside, like, if you could have Damian Lillard instead of Kyrie for the rest of the playoffs, and it's like a seamless transition, he knows the offense, the chemistry is there, all of that, do you do it?
For this postseason?
Yeah,
just like, this postseason,
put him on the Celtics team for the run instead of Kyrie.
I don't know. I don't think that's pretty difficult. Damian Lillard, he just had coming off of that game, you have to have confidence in him. But Kyrie has a lot of success in the postseason. I understand that pretty much all of it, with the exception of the past four games, is because of LeBron James, mostly.
I said he should have been the MVP in, what was it, 2015?
Yeah.
The year he hit that shot. No,
not to minimize
his own success.
Not to minimize his success. But the point being, he's had success in the postseason, more so than Lillard. He's shown it. Is he your guy? Will he continue doing what he has done? I don't know. I think it's – I don't think you can go wrong. I think they're pretty much on an even playing field in regard to having them for a postseason run.
I mean, Lillard, to me at this point, I was always a big Russell Westbrook guy because I like, you know, the do-everything player and just averaging a triple-double. I had so much trouble getting past that. Like, how can he not be the best point guard in the league if he's doing that? But, you know, I think it's – I even put him ahead of Curry at this point. I think it's Lillard and Kyrie, and that's the discussion. And there's certainly a discussion to be had, and I think some of it comes down to – what you favor in a player. The other thing I thought of was that, and we kind of talked about this a little bit a few weeks ago with Dwayne Wade's whole, you know, farewell tour. And I think Dwayne Wade is an overrated player. He's a great player, but I think his legacy is very overrated because he always played with great players. He played with Shaquille O'Neal, you know, when he was, you know, he wasn't Shaq, but he was still a very dominant player. He played with LeBron James. He played with Chris Bosh. He's played with some excellent players. Damian Lillard, I think, is 100 times the player Dwayne Wade is. And there's some hyperbole in there, but I think Damian Lillard, you know, his game is Wade had to play in a specific era. Lillard's game transcends time. Lillard hit that shot. Dwayne Wade never in a million years hits that shot. But because Wade played in Miami, because he played with LeBron, he gets the reputation he had. And this could change. Hopefully last night's shot goes a long way. Lillard's not going to sniff that because he's played in Portland and he's never had much of a supporting cast outside of a couple years of a young LaMarcus Aldridge. So, I mean, this to me is like, this is what an NBA superstar is. It's not Dwayne Wade. Damian Lillard is what the league should be marketing as their superstar.
Well, I think they both are. And I mean, Miami is a much more marketable area than Portland.
Right. And that's naturally how it works.
And he's also from that 2003 draft class, his relationship with LeBron.
Well, that's kind of what I'm saying is that everything fell right for Dwayne Wade to be a superstar.
Marketability-wise and legacy-wise, sure. Yeah, definitely.
If Dwayne Wade is drafted maybe a year later and spends his whole career in Portland as the best player on the team, is he getting this massive farewell tour? I don't think so. I really don't. I mean, maybe it's certainly something. He's certainly a Hall of Famer.
I also think it's too early because he has probably 9 more years like 10, 8 or 9 years behind Dwayne Wade.
I mean, that's fair. There is still some time. He's 28 years old. So, you know, he's been in the league for a while now. He's been in the league for 7 years. So you figure another 7-8 years, maybe. We'll see what he can do. You know, he's never really won anything.
And I don't know what his contract situation is, but I want to see if he ever does get that piece, his own Shaquille O'Neal or his own maybe LeBron James. Probably not. But if he does get a supporting cast, yeah, the sky's the limit for this guy. He is unbelievable. And I think he gets enough credit. I think he gets a lot of credit. I think people understand how great he is. You hit a shot like that, I mean, there's no other way to put it. You're great.
I mean, just utter onions. All right, your final thought, Lebowitz.
So I'll do the Red Sox. They were postponed on Monday night.
On a negative note, sure.
On a negative note, they're postponed. No, I'm going to spin this. I'm not going to discuss the team as much. But
I mean, what's to discuss? They suck. Sorry. Go ahead.
So they're postponed Monday night, rescheduled Tuesday afternoon for they have a doubleheader, 1 o'clock, 7 o'clock. I went to the 1 o'clock game because it was like $6 on StubHub. I texted you. You had an obligation. You were covering the Bruins game. I texted probably six or seven other people, and they were all either working or had appointments or the timing was too tight. So I decided to go to the game by myself. I drove into Boston after work, and I bought a program. I just kept score, sat about 10 rows behind the on-deck circle because it was completely empty pretty much. If you were watching the game, you saw on TV. And I saw Chris Sale have his best outing of the season. 10 strikeouts. He only went five innings, but 10 strikeouts. Only gave up two earned runs. I saw Xander Betts hit a moonshot. It was a great game.
Who hit a moonshot? Xander Betts?
Xander Bogaerts. Sorry. I conflate my names. So I did see Mookie Betts hit a two RBI single.
Yeah, he had a good game. He had a good day. He's starting to come around.
He's starting to hit a little bit better. JD Martinez kind of crapped the bed. But point being, it was therapeutic. And I'm going to do it again. I think more people should go to games by themselves because you can sit wherever you want, basically. It's easier to sneak around. You don't have to deal with, you know, any knuckleheads around you, really. And it depends on who you go with. But I really enjoyed it. And
no,
I think I might make this a trend.
That's like a total old man kind of day. Like, that's something I could picture, like, my grandfather telling me he did back in, like, 1952. But at the same time, I'm, like, you told me this off the air. I was kind of jealous. Like, that sounds like a hell of a day. Go to the ballpark, get a beer, a thing of peanuts, break out the scorecard, and just, you know, go through it and really focus on the game. Because when you go with people, it's a social event, which isn't bad. But actually focus on the game, watch it, like take in the actual baseball element. Like, I want to try that now. I'd say let's go together, but I guess that would defeat the whole purpose, right?
Well, we can go together and just ditch each other once we get there.
Sitting in separate sections of the ballpark.
Yeah, I'll see you in the ninth.
Well, no. Like, just convene in the fifth inning, check the scorecard, see if we have the same, you know, the same thing.
Exactly. No, but it was great.
That sounds like a really good time. I'm like actually kind of jealous you got to do that.
It was therapeutic. And I mean, it does make it a little extra sweet that it was like only $6 for
$6. It was like you're playing hooky. It's like weekday Red Sox games are the best because you feel like you're dodging all the responsibilities in the world.
No one was there. It was awesome.
I'm kind of like imagining what you did put on top of that. I used to go to one weekday game a year and now they don't have them anymore really. Because you can't go in April, it's too cold. And you can't go once football season starts because it's football season.
Yeah.
But I used to try to go to one day game a year, and it's the absolute best. Weekday day games are the best thing.
You're guaranteed to, you know, be able to move up pretty much.
Right.
Because not enough people go. And it's just nice to have a day game and then be done with the game and be like, I have the rest of the afternoon.
Yeah, like, have a nice dinner. You probably could have played golf, honestly, when you left. Just have the
Well, we had the Bruins. Day.
Oh, that's right. There's Bruins game that night. That's right.
So I was thinking I could have done a doubleheader, go from the Red Sox to the Bruins game, but
you're paying a little more than $6 to do that.
That is very true. That's very true.
Now what I want to do is do the day game and then play golf and then have myself a nice steak dinner. Just have the ultimate dad day.
That's the ideal Saturday, right?
No, but like do it during the week. So I'd like, because there's an added like, I don't know, endorphin release or whatever, or emotional high of just knowing that you're like everybody else is dealing with responsibilities and bull crap and work and you're outside drinking.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
It makes me like college again. That's what I'm looking for.
Well, there is a feel to when you're doing recreational stuff on a weekday. Yeah. And it's, I don't know if it's better than the weekend because the weekend there's no pressure of like, I got to go back to work tomorrow. But it is, it's kind of like rebellious in a way. It's you're kind of ditching everything and you're doing this and the vast majority of people are not because they can't.
It's like a special treat kind of thing.
It's a freedom thing, you know? It's a freedom thing.
Not America. Really want to do it. All right. We got to wrap this up now so I can go look at Red Sox. That'll do it for us for this episode. We're going to go back to back. We'll go at some point tomorrow afternoon or later this afternoon, depending on when you're listening to this and what time I get it up, because it might not be for a bit. We'll be talking draft. We'll cover the Patriots draft, NFL draft. There's a lot to talk about. I'm glad we're waiting because I know if we did a draft episode today, Josh Rosen would get traded before I got a chance to post it. So hopefully that happens in the next 12, 15 hours or so. So we, if it happens, we can talk about it. But draft episode coming tomorrow, Celtics episode coming later in the week, and then we'll get going again with the Bruins, and there'll be a draft recap at some point, yada, yada, yada. To keep track of all of it, follow us on Twitter at Calling It Podcast and check us out online at clnsmedia.com. Until tomorrow, he's Alex Lubwitz. I'm Alex Barth. Thanks for listening.